support for this KQED podcast comes from ACT, presenting Stephen Sondheim's rapturous musical, A Little Night Music. Featuring an all-star cast, A Little Night Music begins performances at ACT's Geary Theater May 20th. ACT-SF.org.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in today for Mina Kim. Coming up in our first half hour, the environmental crisis off the coast of Santa Barbara. Crews are working to contain the damage after an oil spill blackened miles of pristine beach, threatening wildlife. We'll hear the latest on cleanup efforts and examine how vulnerable the San Francisco Bay is to a similar accident. Then, what's behind the steep rise in the rate of suicide among younger African-American children? What does it say about growing up black in our culture today? We'll get started with Forum right after this. Welcome to KQED's Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Mina Kim. And later in the hour, we'll be examining a steep rise in suicides among African-American children. But we begin this morning with that oil spill off the coast of Santa Barbara. On Tuesday, about 21,000 gallons of crude spilled into the ocean after a pipeline broke, blackening 9 miles of coastline, threatening and killing marine life, and bringing back terrible memories of the 1969 oil spill. That one had a huge impact on oil and gas exploration off the coast, and it really helped create the modern environmental movement down there. We begin with Tyler Hayden. He's news editor with the Santa Barbara Independent newspaper. He joins us this morning from Santa Barbara. Tyler, good morning.
Good morning.
Let me begin just by asking you, what is the status of this cleanup right now?
Well, they're in full-up cleanup mode after a pretty slow response, I would say, from the incident command that they had set up. Now there's about, I would say, 300 people in the refugio area up and down the beach. It's a pretty long stretch of coastline that they're dealing with now. So there's a number of workers on the beach actually picking up. When I was there yesterday, they were picking up vegetation, seaweed that was covered in oil to hopefully prevent it from being eaten by seabirds. And then out in the water, I saw a dozen to maybe 18 boats trying to boom and collect the oil. I think at this point there's been about 8,000 gallons of oil and water collected. I guess a big question there is how much of that 8,000 is actually oil and how much of it is mixed with water.
And give us a sense. I mentioned that a huge oil spill back in 1969. That was 3 million gallons, that Unocal accident. This one, of course, much more small, but nonetheless serious concerns about damage, right?
Correct. Where this happened is an extremely pristine stretch of coastline. It's one of the only non-developed places in our area on the Central Coast. And so it's really well protected. There's a really ecologically rich reef right off the coast called Naples Reef. And this happened all right there. So it's, you know, the area is normally teeming with sea lions and seabirds and migrating whales sort of further out into the channel. And like you said, it's not as big as the 1969 spill. It's certainly distressing, and it's symbolic in a lot of ways of you know how and why and you know how we can do to stop these things from happening.
Well, your paper reported, I think, yesterday that the Texas-based company which ran this pipeline, Plains All American Pipeline, that they have something of a history with Santa Barbara County, that they sued the county a few years ago, saying that the county had no authority to regulate the pipelines. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. So when All American installed the pipe in 1987, as you said, they successfully sued the county. So that the county wouldn't have regulatory authority over the pipeline. Plains argued that because the pipe went over state lines, it should be under federal jurisdiction. They won that lawsuit. The pipe was put under federal watch. Federal government actually then kicked it down to the state, and it went back and forth a couple times because both agencies that were trying to supervise it argued that they didn't have the personnel or the resources to do it. So it was not under the county's watch, and because of that, It was the only pipeline in the county that wasn't fitted with a automatic shutdown system in case of a rupture. So there was no automatic shutdown. It had to be closed by hand. And so sort of that regulatory mess led up to what happened.
Well, let me, that's a good segue into our other guest here this half hour. Yvonne Adasi is Deputy Administrator with the Office of Spill Prevention and Response. That's a division of the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. And she joins us this morning from Santa Barbara as well. Yvonne Adasi, good morning.
Good morning.
If you could just respond to what Tyler just said there, that the questions between the state and federal governments over regulation of this pipeline, what do you know?
So I know about what Tyler was talking about. I think what's important for us right now is we are in spill response mode, right? So there's an ongoing investigation. There's a lot of time to figure out how to make sure that these types of things don't happen again, who's responsible, what fault looks like, what blame looks like. But from our perspective, oil spill prevention and response, we're about dealing with what's in front of us. And right now what's in front of us is how to clean this up as quickly as possible and make sure that restoration is done appropriately.
All right, fair enough. And I do want to come back to that question of regulation. But in terms of the containing the spill, what would you add to what Tyler has already told us about the cleanup?
So Tyler provided a really good overview. I think that what would be what's interesting for people to understand is that we address all the different areas where the spill is. So on water, there's skimming operations. There's booming operations, so we try and move oil into places so we can collect it easier. We try and keep it out of other places. There is shoreline cleanup. There's assessing the shorelines, trying to figure out what the best way is to clean it up without causing further damage. There's also the issues that we have in dealing with the tribal nations down here and making sure that whatever it is that we do it in a way that is that takes into account their concerns and their questions.
What are
their
concerns?
Their concerns is that there's a number of areas along this area and at Refugio State Beach that is within their ancient rights. And so making sure that we do not disturb sacred sites for them, making sure that whatever is done in an appropriate way.
And how would you describe the extent of the damage to wildlife at this point?
So right now, I'm glad you asked that question because that was the third part that we have during response. We have wildlife operations. We have three different groups within that branch. The first one is out and doing what we call a recovery and transportation. So there are five teams out collecting oiled wildlife in a safe and appropriate manner. We have another group that is transporting that wildlife to a stabilization facility and then ultimately to a facility where they can be rehabilitated. And then and we also have what we call recon teams. So those are teams that go out and take a look at where we see wildlife, where the oil may not be there yet, but where we need to keep in mind where the oil is traveling, where those animals are. And then we do overflights sometimes once, sometimes twice a day to scout the extent not only of the oil but where the wildlife is so that we can plan for where we need to be days from now.
There was an image, some video of a whale that had gotten close to the slick and may have even gotten some of that oil on it. And I believe there were helicopters trying to scare it away from going further into the oil. Do you have any idea what happens once a animal like that submerges again?
So it's a very good question. There's a lot of information in the literature having to do with air-breathing mammals that dive. Whales is a good example. So typically their biggest risk, as you would see in there, is taking in the volatiles as they're breathing in. And most of this oil is fairly weathered, so that probably shouldn't be much of an issue. But we have folks out there. We've been working with the mammal networks to make sure that we are taking all of that into account. And obviously, we don't take whales into rehabilitation, but we do have monitors.
All right. That's Yvonne Adasi with the Office of Spill Prevention and Response joining us this morning from Santa Barbara. Also with us, Tyler Hayden, news editor with the Santa Barbara Independent newspaper. And if you want to join us, we're just talking about this for the half hour, and the number to call is 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can also email us. It's forum@kqed.org, or you can also send us a message on Twitter. It's at KQED Forum. Tyler, a moment ago, you described the initial response as, I think you said, slow. What were you referring to?
Well, I think what people were struck by was in the initial hours after the spill was discovered, which was around noon on Tuesday, that there wasn't a lot of mobilization on the part of Plains, the pipeline company, to kind of get a handle or get an assessment of what had actually occurred. There was a pretty massive response by citizens, by residents who ran down to the beach with buckets and shovels and tried to do what they could to save the beach themselves. But I think people were struck by the fact that there wasn't kind of a lot of, there wasn't a plan or there wasn't a lot of infrastructure in place on the part of Plains to respond to something like this. I mean, no one thinks that, bigger agencies like, the Coast Guard or Fish and Wildlife or other state agencies maybe are going to be on the scene within minutes. But the people who are there, I think folks thought that they might have had a better game plan to start handling things right away. And it took a number of hours from what I've been told and actually what I saw myself.
And Ivan Adasi, describe the responsibilities between the federal and the state government agencies. How does that get divvied up? And I would you agree with Tyler that the very first response should be from the company?
So under both federal law and state law here in California, companies have contingency planning requirements. They have requirements for having oil spill cleanup response companies to actually affect their cleanup operations. For the federal government, they have worst-case discharge. For state, they have reasonable worst-case discharge. And they have to demonstrate their ability to have a certain amount of equipment out at certain periods of time. So the other thing they are required to do is provide quick and rapid notification to their OSROs, I'm sorry, we talk in acronyms, to their oil spill response organizations, as well as to the state and federal warning centers. So I think that the question that Tyler brings up is, what are the roles, what are the responsibilities, and how quickly should folks need to come out? I can tell you that within the hour of our notification, Fish and Wildlife had people rolling. We had people on scene within about an hour and a half, as did Coast Guard. So again, there's that rolling, that assessment, and then there's the cascading in resources, both personnel as well as equipment. So I think that this comes into the investigation afterwards, and how do we make sure that our requirements are the way that they need to be into the future to have the best response possible.
And in terms of going forward, I mean, obviously the pipeline has been shut down. There's no more oil spilling the way there was with the Deepwater Horizon spill back in 2010, which went on for weeks and months, really. But so there's nothing like that. But in terms of containing the damage, what are you concerned about now? In other words, if nothing were done to contain it and clean it up, what would be the most vulnerable things, and what do you want to make sure doesn't happen by staying on top of this?
So I would say that staying on top of it means that to the extent possible, we limit how far it gains on the water, because that will continue to have shoreline impacts. It's also picking up oil once it does hit the shorelines as quickly as possible so that it doesn't resurface and continue to move along with the tide and the currents. We obviously are very concerned about continuing possibilities for oiled wildlife. And we also have teams out doing what we call natural resource damage assessment. So those are folks who go out, who take samples, who try and figure out what the extent of the wildlife injury is. So it might be more than just birds and marine mammals, right? I know that folks have reported seeing invertebrates in the intertidal, those types of things. So we actually have an entire group that their entire job is to figure out the extent of that injury and then to make sure that we receive damages so that we can indeed work to restore the environment.
And Tyler Hayden mentioned a moment ago that there is a reef just off of the coast where this spill occurred. How much concern is there, and what kind of damage could there be to the reef?
So right now, it's my understanding that the reef is outside of the zone that is expected to get impacted. Obviously, we are working with through the Unified Command Structure to figure out if there's any protection measures that can be done around that reef and how to best make sure that the oil doesn't get there so that we can minimize any damage.
We've got an email here from Carolyn who writes, I want to understand who's paying for the cleanup. The oil company should be paying for everything, including any work performed by the cleanup crew. Yvonne Adassi, how does that get settled?
Yes, absolutely. I couldn't agree with her more. The way that we look at it is that the responsible party is responsible. So, but for this event, would something have happened? And if the answer to that is no, then they are responsible for that cleanup and the costs associated with that. So the Coast Guard had the federal government has a federal fund that they can reach back to. The state has a state fund that we can reach back to. But ultimately, it is all paid for by the responsible party.
And Tyler Hayden, what are people talking about down there in Santa Barbara? I mean, this is a Memorial Day weekend, a great weekend for hotels and restaurants, that kind of thing. And I imagine a lot of reservations have been canceled.
Yeah, there's a lot of angst in the business community, and there's sort of a lot of curiosity and speculation and worry about how far down the slick is going to travel. But as you said, the two of our sort of main beaches up the coast, El Refugio Refugio and El Capitan, are both closed, and they both would normally be packed with campers this weekend. And also, as you said, hotels are concerned about that. There's a claims number that is being distributed around in the media, and then by the Joint Command, where people can call if they feel like their business has been impacted. So people are talking about that. They're talking about how long the cleanup will take. No one's under the illusion that it's going to be cleaned up by the end of the day or anything. But I think they're sort of curious exactly how long we will see crude on the beach and on the shoreline, and how long it'll be in the water nearby. And then there's I don't want to harp on it, but there's lingering talk about, like I said, that initial response. And as Yvonne said, I mean, all that sort of is being actively investigated and looked at and followed up on. But the people who are down there initially are still upset that they had to be the ones to take it upon themselves to be the first responders.
Yvonne Adassi, do you have any sense of sort of the answers to some of the questions Tyler raised there about how long it'll take to really clean this up?
So, they always say that you ask a biologist a question, and part of the answer that they give is depends. So I guess the one thing I want to start with is that the Department of Fish and Wildlife and the Office of Spill Prevention and Response, as well as our federal and local counterparts, will be here until it is cleaned up. Okay, so that takes into account not only cleaning up the beaches, but making sure that everyone agrees that the beach is cleaned up, it meets appropriate standards, those types of things. So I would say that we are probably talking 2 to 3 weeks on the inside, and I would hate to speculate much further beyond that. I can tell you that we are making plans for 4 to 6 weeks. I'm not saying we'll be down here for 4 to 6 weeks. We're making plans because this is what we do. We need to be able to staff up as much as possible to make these things happen.
And when you say it depends, what do you mean? Depends on what? The weather, things that are you can't control?
Right, exactly. There are a number of things that you know, if we have a rain event, on the one hand, we would love that in California right now, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Right. On the other hand, that might take surface oil to different places. It might take oil out on the water to different places. So I guess, as Taylor said, we are not talking about days here. We are talking about time. And so I guess what I would say to the people of Santa Barbara is that, you know, you have my personal commitment and you have the commitment of this governor and everybody within that chain that we will be here until the job is done, and it is done well, and it is done in a way that the locals feel like they've been made as whole as possible, as well as tribal concerns.
All right, let's go to the phones now. And Scott in San Jose, you're first. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having this program.
You bet.
So I just had a comment that, you know, not to quote a cliche, but an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of effort, you know, in recovery. Actually, I can't remember exactly what the saying is, but
pound of cure, I think. But go ahead.
It's just a shame that, you know, the not to harp on you, Yvonne, but, you know, it's the California Coastal Commission's job to regulate, you know, and assist in the regulation of the petroleum industry. And you claimed earlier that there was no, I think you said there was, you know, a difficulty in figuring out resources to, you know, to regulate the pipeline in this case. And how much resources is now being put in to cleaning up this now catastrophe because it wasn't regulated properly earlier?
Yvonne? I should point out she's not with the Coastal Commission. She's with Fish and Wildlife, but go ahead.
Right. So I don't believe that I said that there were insufficient resources to address prevention or the regulation of this pipeline. Taylor was talking about questions of regulations and those types of things, and I don't want to speculate on that because I think that there are three approaches to how it is that we regulate and deal with petroleum transportation, whether it's by pipeline or by vessel or through platform. And obviously prevention is the first. We try the best that we can to have regulations that ensure that we provide as much prevention as possible. We all know that minus not moving oil at all, prevention can never be down to zero. So then the second thing is with contingency planning, drills and exercises, requiring that they have sufficient equipment and personnel so that if, unfortunately, we do have an event that we can mount the response that's necessary. So obviously, preventing something from happening is the best and first approach, but we also know that unfortunately, prevention can never go down to zero. Risk can never go down to zero.
But to the caller's point, there are questions about regulation and oversight that will be dealt with, maybe not today or tomorrow, but certainly, hopefully, in the near future, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Scott, thanks very much for the call. Let's try to get another one in here. Robert in Los Altos. Good morning. And let me ask you to be quick if you can, because we're almost at the bottom of the hour.
Yeah, just a perspective of someone who used to live down in the area, just kind of the aesthetic impact. I mean, anyone who's driven down 101 and rounded that bend at Point Conception and gets that first view of the Northern Channel Islands, I'm sure feels this is pretty tragic what's happened. My question is, given the proximity of the islands to, where this has happened, has anyone from, say, the conservation, the National Park Service or the Conservation Society that owns a lot of that property on the islands, have they chimed in or do they have any concerns?
I'm going to get a quick response from Yvonne.
Yes, so we have here what's called a unified command, and so everybody who has jurisdiction, everybody who is considered a stakeholder, that includes national parks, that includes federal state parks, that includes national marine sanctuaries, that includes everybody who has trustee authority is actively integrated into that command.
All right, and then Yvonne, just very quickly, the next couple days are critical because why?
The next couple of days are critical because we have good weather ahead of us. It is the time for us to get as much oil off of the beaches, out of the environment, so that we can minimize further impacts.
All right. Yvonne Adasi, Deputy Administrator with the Office of Spill Prevention and Response from the State of California, thanks so much for being with us this morning. And thank you. And thanks, Tyler Hayden, as well, with the Santa Barbara Independent. Appreciate your joining us. We are going to be switching gears for the rest of this hour, looking at a disturbing rise in the suicide rate for black children. So stay with us for that. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Mina Kim.